Support for this podcast comes from the Peabody Essex Museum, presenting Ethiopia at the Crossroads. On view now. Find out more about the exhibition at PEM.org.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Lady Gaga is as big a star as you can get. At the top of the charts, at the apex of pop superstardom. Millions of downloads, billions of YouTube views. But it's not all about fishnets, leather, and costume makeup for this pop star. Gaga is telling her fans to wake up, get empowered, be yourself. Fans of all ages are eating it up. This hour on Point, the unquenchable thirst for Lady Gaga, glam, pop, royalty. You can join the conversation. Are you Gaga over Lady Gaga? What's on your Gaga playlist? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York City is Maura Johnston. She's a music critic and writer based in New York. She's written for Rolling Stone, Village Voice, The Daily Beast, Vanity Fair, and Gawker. Maura Johnston, great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And with me in the studio is Nancy Bauer. She's an associate professor of philosophy at Tufts University and a mother of four. Her opinion piece, Lady Power, was in Sunday's New York Times. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Nancy Bauer, thank you for being with us.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for having me.
Maura Johnston, I'll begin with you. Set the stage for our conversation this hour by helping us understand the impact that Lady Gaga has had on music culture just in the space of 1 year.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I mean, right now, music and the music business are obviously in a very sort of, I would say, crisis state. You know, it's really hard to get traction for a new artist. And what Lady Gaga has done really successfully, I think, is she's harnessed the attention of people of all, you know, colors and genre preferences and everything. You know, she's really someone who everyone wants to work with. Kanye West wanted to work with her. You know, Beyonce has worked with her. And she's someone who has this persona, and she also has these really great songs. And she has sort of made the release of the pop single an event again, which is something that's been really hard to do with the sort of decline of MTV and this sort of, you know, waning importance of pop music in the face of other media types assaulting it from all angles.
So her debut album generated four number one songs, as I said, millions of downloads, over a billion views of her videos online. Who is her audience base, Maura? Because it seems her popularity really cuts across disparate subcultures.
It really does. I mean, she just, you know, she can, I've heard her songs coming out of radios, passing by cars driven by everyone and, you know, people of all kinds. I mean, she has, you know, dance music fans, she has pop music fans, she's had the crossover hits with Beyonce, like I said earlier. She just, people who like big choruses, who like to sing along with songs that, you know, might be wordless vocalizing at points, but I guess that sometimes makes it more fun to sing along. She's just someone who can harness the attention. And also, you know, obviously she's a fan of any news outlet who wants to run photos of her and gets a lot of page views by doing so.
So before she was Lady Gaga, she was a piano-playing singer-songwriter in New York City. What's her story? What's her background, Maura?
Well, she was, you know, she was a student in New York, and she sort of played, and she had this sort of Fiona Apple background, and then she just decided one day that, you know, what would work for her better was writing big pop hits and very sort of self-reflexive. Her first album was called The Fame, even though it was her first album. And as her career progressed, it became more explicitly about fame and what being famous does in this culture of gossip blogs and gossip magazines and constant focus on celebrity. And, you know, I mean, she did these really ambitious videos. The video for Paparazzi was very long, and it had credits, you know, which was sort of a throwback to another ambitious video, I guess, Michael Jackson's Thriller. And then she's had this EP called The Fame Monster, which came out late last year, and that had the song Bad Romance, which also had a big event video, and then Telephone, which was her single with Beyonce, which had you know, a big video that had a splashy premiere, even though really, right now, it's really tough for music videos to sort of make a big splash because the days of the MTV premiere are over. You know, she sort of harnessed the power of the internet and made everyone go to the site Vevo, which is a sort of music videos-centric version of YouTube. And really just, she's been really great at just harnessing attention, which is so much of, I think, what her true talent is. You know, obviously I like a lot of her songs too, but at the same time, the fact that she's been able to just command eyeballs is in itself its own sort of skill right now.
She was born Stefani Joanne Angelina Germanotta, age 24 now. She was born in New York City, grew up in Manhattan, went to Catholic girls' school. Is that right, Maura?
Yes.
When did the transition come from, you know, Catholic schoolgirl to mega superstar, and where did the name come from?
There's a sort of apocryphal story about her once playing piano and not really getting a lot of attention. And then so she threw her skirt over her head. And that was the sort of beginning of, you know, at first, a lot of her commentary on her outfits was how she didn't like to wear pants very much. And that was sort of the beginning. Also, the story about her name is that it's partially derived from the Queen song Radio Gaga, which is a very sort of anthemic song, which has a video with a lot of people just clapping along. And I think that it's funny because she definitely has that sort of power to, you know, bring people into her orbit and make them worship her, for lack of a better term.
She appeared on the Ellen DeGeneres Show last November, and here she is, Lady Gaga, telling Ellen about not fitting in when she was in high school.
Maybe in high school, Ellen, you feel discriminated against, like you don't fit in, and you want to be like everyone else, but not really. On the inside, you really want to be like Boy George, you know?
Yeah.
So I did anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So I really want my fans to know that it's okay, you know? Sometimes in life, you don't always feel like a winner, but that doesn't mean you're not a winner.
Nancy Bauer, I'll turn to you. How do you see Lady Gaga? After your piece in the New York Times on Sunday, you were telling me you got some very interesting comments which made you believe that she's quite a polarizing figure.
Yeah, it's interesting because a number of comments said, I cannot believe that you're disgracing the pages of the New York Times by talking about this trash, and especially because you're a philosophy professor. This just shows that you should never have gotten a PhD and the whole profession is going to hell in a handbasket. Other people said, how dare you touch this sacred cow? She is a genius. She saved my life. She's brilliant. She's wonderful. And then there were comments. One was actually from a former student of mine who said, look, she is a really, really important figure for gay rights, for transgendered people. She's got her fist in the air. She's all about political power. And it was just really all over the place. The point that I was trying to make is that one of the appeals that she has is precisely how polarizing she is.
Maura Johnston, is it enough to say that Lady Gaga is this generation's Madonna, you know, with the outfits and the blonde hair and the sometimes obscene behavior, honestly? Or is it something more than that?
It's funny because I've actually been thinking about this topic a lot, and I think it's something different, only because I think Madonna came up in such a different age of media where, you know, there was the mass and it was more possible. I mean, the fact that Gaga has this sort of ability to make people who are, you know, directing their own media diets look at her and want to be her. I mean, she's definitely taking cues from Madonna. If you watch the video for her new single, Alejandro, you know, it's full of references to Madonna's video for Vogue. It has her swallowing a rosary, which, you know, was one of Madonna's iconic pieces of jewelry. I guess, you know, in the fact that she is this sort of super polarizing pop star who has a very devoted fan base and who isn't afraid to be controversial, she is. But I do think there's something else going on there. There's something more that, you know, she's kind of this really great media figure in that she can harness the power and, you know, like we said earlier, you know, just inspire these arguments that are just so fervent. And in a lot of ways, that's perfect for the online world because that gets page views and traffic and comments and, you know, it's good for ball, as another discipline might say.
So, Nancy Bauer, speak to more of that media figure issue. I mean, I've been hearing all morning, you can know who Lady Gaga is and have never heard her music. She's everywhere in pop culture. Is this talent, so to speak, or is this savvy self-promotion and good marketing?
Well, I'm not going to weigh in specifically on that question because it's not my bailiwick, although I'll tell you that just as a civilian, it's got to be a little bit of both, I would imagine. But what's interesting to me about her, if I can weigh in on this question about Madonna, the thing to me that makes her different from Madonna is that she is able to make people feel as though they know her, as though she really is just this homely, insecure girl. And she uses the word insecure in the Rolling Stone profile of her that just came out yesterday, who has made herself into Lady Gaga and has harnessed her own power. And unlike Madonna, who I think felt otherworldly or above us all or somehow really a celebrity star, Lady Gaga is a huge star but abjures the idea of being a celebrity. She wants, it's a DIY thing. Everybody can do this, and she wants to be an exemplar that way.
Let me get a call in here before we go to our first break in Nashville, Tennessee. Megan, you're on the line. We don't have much time. If you could be brief, thank you for calling.
Yes, thanks. I tried to resist listening to Lady Gaga and then caught one of her songs on the radio and then just couldn't get enough. And I just, like, kind of started listening to her albums, The Fame and The Fame Monster, and realized, you know, you may not agree with everything she's saying, but you got to respect that she's saying stuff and making pop music more than it has been in a long time by coming out, writing her own music, and having something to say in a world where it had been written. You know, nobody writes their own songs in pop.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about pop music and the larger-than-life career of Lady Gaga. I'm joined this hour by Nancy Bauer, Associate Professor of Philosophy at Tufts University, and with music critic Maura Johnston. In an interview on June 1st, Larry King of CNN asked Lady Gaga why she wears such outrageous costumes on stage, and here's what she had to say.
They're meant to be kind of a rejection of what people view about women. I guess I'm a feminist. I am a feminist.
Fashion certainly is her calling card, Maura Johnston. Sets her apart in a crowded field. The feathers, the sequins, the plastic, the bubbles, the canes, the crutches, the masks. I mean, you name it, she wears it, doesn't she?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the interview where she was actually dressed like Larry King.
What do you make of the fashion influence here, Nancy Bauer?
Well, first I want to point out how interesting it is that last summer she told, as I point out in the thing I wrote for the New York Times, she told Ann Powers, the journalist Ann Powers, writing a piece on her for the LA Times, that she was a little bit of a feminist. Actually, sorry, this was last fall. Last summer, she told a Norwegian journalist that she was not a feminist. What she said specifically was, I hail men, I love men, I'm not a feminist, and thereby seemed to reinforce the old dumb idea that a feminist is someone who hates men. Then she told Ann Powers that she was a little bit of a feminist, and now we have her telling Larry King that she is a feminist, and she repeats this idea also in this new Rolling Stones profile.
So the shift back and forth, a lot of critics are saying, oh, this is just marketing. She just says what she has to say to be in the moment.
I'm not sure about that. I think that she actually believes all three of those things. Who knows? Maybe she doesn't. I'm not sure it's as canny as all that. But what's interesting is that, and Ann Powers seems to suggest in this article that she's growing into her feminism. But what I would like to point out and what I think is really interesting about her is her costumes, as outrageous as they are also very conventionally sexualized. So in the new Alejandro video, for example, she's at one point wearing a very skimpy latex outfit. She also wears a latex nun's costume, again, a la Madonna, or using religious iconography a la Madonna. But she has a cross, looks like it's almost in red tape, over her crotch. Another point, she's dancing in a tan bra and panties and wearing some thigh-high stockings. And these are very conventionalized. The idea of drawing attention to one's crotch or wearing underpants and dancing is a very conventionalized sexual performance in another way. So even if what she's trying to do is make a point about what it is to be a woman, and in a critical way by wearing these costumes, in fact, she's at the same time simply conventionally sexualizing herself. And it's difficult in this world not to do both at the same time.
Let's get a call from Margot in Rock Island, Illinois. Hi, Margot. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Hi, fine. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was actually calling in because I can't believe all the attention that she gets. I really don't think that she's a prophet of any sort. When you look at musicians from the 60s and where music is right now, I don't see that she's any different from Britney Spears or Madonna. I don't think she speaks positively, and I don't think that I've heard her say anything, you know, in her music about the war or the real issues going on in the world. And I think it's a shame that so many people are mesmerized by someone talking about sex and fame and pretending that it's deep, when I don't think there's much substance to it.
And the costumes and the religious iconography that's used?
I really think it's not very tasteful. I just think that there's so many other things to be said, and so many musicians out there that are doing it but that don't get famous because they don't sell themselves in a sexual way.
Margot, thank you very much. Maura Johnston.
I mean, I think it's sort of a catch-22 in a way, you know, because you're if you want to be a commercially successful musician, you have to sort of hew to some of the commercially obvious tropes, like, you know, dressing sexually or being provocative or not speaking politically. I mean, you're just not going to get on pop radio with a political song at this point, unless, you know, it's very, very couched, or if you explain it as political after the fact. I'm not explaining this. I think that, you know, I don't think that's a good thing for society. But I do think that the way that, you know, I would prefer more Lady Gaga's to more, say, Katy Perry's. You know what I mean? I know that that's sort of a reductive argument, where Katy Perry is all fluff and all sort of, you know, being conventional, whereas Lady Gaga, at least she's sending out a message that it's okay to be different and okay to follow your star and your dream. And I know that that seems like a very simplistic thing to say, but at the same time, you know, think about when people were young and listening to, say, Madonna or a pop song that just changed their outlook and allowed them to see beyond their everyday. That's something that I think is still really important, even in the age of the internet.
Here's a comment from our website, onpointradio.org, from Dee, who says, whether you like her or not, Lady Gaga has achieved fame through hard work, not a talent search show with a stylist and voice coaches. Lady Gaga actually has talent and can play the piano beautifully. My question for both of you, Nancy and Maura, underneath the haystack wigs and the outrageous clothing, really is a case study and has been written about quite a bit of what it takes to succeed in the music business today. First, I'd like to ask you about her shrewd use of new digital platforms while still leveraging the clout of a major record label, Maura. It's something that hasn't been done effectively till this point.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that she's definitely somebody who has harnessed her her persona online. It's really interesting if you read her Twitter account. It is very personal. You know, a lot of famous people's Twitter accounts are just like, check out my new video, this is great. But she'll use it in a semi-diaristic way, which will, you know, pull people in. And it's really interesting because her persona is so based in this sort of artifice and fashion. But then, you know, she sends out Twitter messages about sitting with her dad after he's been in the hospital.
Or having lupus, or testing positive for lupus.
Right. Or I think, well, that's more like she's sort of lupus prone. Right. I don't think she actually has lupus.
Right.
But, you know, it's those sorts of ways to get inside. And, I mean, her fans on Twitter, they're very mobilized. Anytime there's a new video about to premiere, you know, they'll look at the 30-second previews as if they're sort of on tablets brought down from a mountain. It's really, really impressive. Granted, I think a lot of that is just that she's created this very effective persona that is just really compelling to a lot of people. And, you know, I think that really there's a lot to be said for the fact that she's always on and always in character, or seems always in character, because that way the fans feel like they're connecting with something real. And I think that that's really important right now in this age of disconnection and fragmentation, where they feel like they actually have a connection with an artist.
She tells Rolling Stone magazine, she says, I don't even drink water on stage in front of an audience because I want them to focus on the fantasy of the music. She definitely believes in this idea of the pop persona. Isn't that correct?
Yes, definitely.
Nancy Bauer, what do you think about this new product being a product in this new kind of recording environment, which goes beyond selling records but encompasses everything from merchandise to makeup deals. I mean, she's everywhere in every sort of deal you can imagine.
Well, I think it's interesting that on the one hand, she's completely invested in this pop persona. In that article, she also talks about how if she wants to be like Michael Jackson and just live this part and be this person called Lady Gaga, and she calls herself a performance artist in part for that reason. At the same time, though, as you also pointed out, she's really invested in seeming like every woman. Somebody who gets up in the morning, feels insecure, who's got these problems, whose grandfather is in the hospital, who sends out heartfelt, real Twitter messages. And she professes to be interested in both of those things. When you think about it, they kind of don't go together. We didn't get those kind of Twitters from Michael Jackson, let's say. We simply got the persona. And I think it's precisely her ability to hold what might look like two things that don't go together in the same space and not only seem incoherent, but tap into something that I think is pretty deep in people that people are resonating with and responding to that makes her unique. When I say that it makes her unique, it is not a form of praise necessarily on my part. It's simply an observation.
Let's go to the lines again. Norfolk, Virginia. Timothy is waiting there. Hi, Timothy. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you? Great. I'm doing fine. I just wanted to say, every generation has their sort of Lady Gaga. I mean, in the 60s, we had Nancy Sinatra. You know, in the 70s, we had Grace Jones, and 90s, more recently, Kylie Minogue. And really what I think is happening is that Lady Gaga is actually, like you were saying earlier, riffing off of different artists and speaking to a specific generation. And I think what you're talking about now is that Lady Gaga is more open with her fans. Well, we live in an age of Oprah Winfrey, where everybody talks about their problems and their issues, and I think that's what she's doing, and I think that's she's appealing to a particular generation. It might not be, the 30-year-olds and up, but she is speaking to a specific generation, and they're listening.
Timothy, thank you. Lady Gaga, the voice of this generation. Nancy Bauer?
What Timothy is saying, I think, is right, and the reason that I became interested in her at all is because of something else that I was already interested in, which is the real split that I think that young women experience between, on the one hand, being very ambitious, feeling pretty confident, determined. Of course, this is only women of certain means, young women of a certain means, and who have certain kinds of opportunities. But these young women, like the college students I see, are very ambitious and very talented and ready to take on the world on the one hand. On the other hand, we have the hookup culture in which a lot of these young women report to me that they feel more than ever, I think, that they have to make themselves sexually appealing. They have these sexual experiences with men, sometimes unidirectional in a way that's not very satisfying to them. And if they were to tell me, oh, these experiences really are wonderful for me, I would not be sitting here talking about it. But what they say is they experience a certain kind of power there that evanesces in a way. It's not the same as the power that they feel in their let's say, vocational or avocational lives. And what's interesting to me, and what I think makes Lady Gaga really resonate for this generation of women, is the way that she holds those two things together. She seems to suggest that sexualizing yourself is a form of something like career power.
Let's go back to the phones. Michael in Roxbury, Massachusetts. Hi, Michael. Thanks for waiting. You're on the line.
Hi.
Hello.
I just had a quick comment on Lady Gaga and her stage persona. The gentleman, the previous caller, mentioned Nancy Sinatra and Grace Jones, but you have to put in between there Miss Patti LaBelle and her group LaBelle, which I feel is the original Lady Gaga. If you look at some old YouTube clips of LaBelle, they wore off the chart costumes, and the women could sing very well. And in fact, Patti LaBelle has went on for a solo career, and she's still doing very well. And I don't think your listeners go back far enough to remember the group LaBelle.
I think a lot of them might, Michael, at this table even. Maura, what about that, sort of hearkening to the days of Patti LaBelle and David Bowie? I mean, there are a lot of, you know, precursors to Lady Gaga and what she's doing today. And there are critics who say, you know, what she's doing has already been done, setting her piano on fire a la Jerry Lee Lewis, you know, this futuristic garb reminiscent of David Bowie and the rest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's definitely a product of, you know, a lot of influences. I mean, it's really interesting because, you know, her new single, Alejandro, like a lot of people who listen to it say to me, you know, oh, that reminds me of Ace of Base, you know, the Swedish pop band of the 90s. But then other people will say, oh, it reminds me of ABBA. I mean, she definitely has a way of harnessing all these different touch points. And the LaBelle example is actually a great one because of the outrageous costumes that she wears, you know, not just on stage, but when she's just walking through the airport. And I think that, yeah, she definitely pays homage to all of the different eras of pop. And I think that that's actually, it speaks to how people consume pop right now. I mean, you look at American Idol, which I would say is the biggest sort of pop music delivery platform in the country right now. And it's basically people covering old songs and, you know, making them their own in certain ways. But if you, I think that this hyper-referentiality is definitely something that is both a reflection of culture as it is right now and also just her way of creating something not entirely new, but, you know, then you could argue what is entirely new? What is entirely groundbreaking that can also be super commercial and sell a lot of records and, you know, get a lot of YouTube hits? I don't know. I mean, you know, it says something that Don't Stop Believin' is still one of the most popular songs in the country, even though it's older than probably a lot of Lady Gaga's fans. So,
here's Michael in Hartford, Connecticut. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the program. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I wanted to sort of take exception to an earlier comment or sort of a tone that Lady Gaga is sort of like this people's pop star or that she's this DIY sort of icon. I mean, she does stadium concerts around the country. Now, there's nothing DIY about that. And I guess I'm also interested in taking exception to this idea of her as, you know, using the hypersexualities for empowerment. I guess I'm kind of skeptical that really does provide empowerment. I'm a college student, very much living in the hookup culture that you previously mentioned. And I got to say, I really don't see a lot of positive outgrowth from sort of the Lady Gaga influence.
Michael, thank you. Nancy Bauer.
I absolutely agree with the second thing you said, Michael. What I'm doing in the piece in the New York Times is questioning whether this thing that feels like empowerment or is called empowerment really is empowerment, whether women's wielding of their so-called sexual power is empowering to them or to men for that matter. As for the DIY thing, you're absolutely right that, of course, she's got this huge multi-billion-dollar industry behind her and she does these huge stadium shows. What I meant was that she seems to give some people the sense that they can do it too. You can be, as she likes to put it, insecure, and you can be some girl from wherever, and you can wake up and put on your costume, so to speak, and be somebody else. And I think people really resonate with that you don't have to be, that superstardom is somehow, I think she claims, within other people's grasp. This fits with the American Idol idea as well.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about pop stars, performance, and the eye-opening theatrics of Lady Gaga. We're speaking this hour with music critic Maura Johnston and Nancy Bauer, Associate Professor of Philosophy at Tufts University. Her article on Lady Gaga, Lady Power, appeared in Sunday's New York Times. Speaking to Larry King of CNN recently, Lady Gaga admitted that fame has not brought instant happiness, but she's much more aware of how tough other people have it.
And so many of my fans are really, really, really troubled. And I was really troubled, and I still am fairly troubled. So I guess you could say I relate to my fans in that way. And I choose not to hide from it. I'm not interested, Larry, in being a perfect, placid pop singer that looks great in bikinis and is on the cover of every magazine. I'm more interested in helping my fans to love who they are and helping them to reject prejudice and reject those things that they're taught from society to not like themselves.
Nancy Barra, that goes to what you were speaking of just before the break. Some of Lady Gaga's attention-grabbing antics have made headlines lately, have they not, Maura Johnston? A la Madonna, really, several years ago.
Yeah, there were a couple of incidents at some New York baseball stadiums in recent weeks. She went to Citi Field, which is the home of the Mets, for a recent day game. And the photographers who were there to shoot the game, you know, saw that she was in the crowd. And as they are wont to do when a celebrity shows up at the game, they turned their cameras to her. And she extended a particular digit in their general direction and was then moved to actually the seats that I guess belonged to Jerry Seinfeld normally. And her sort of outrageous behavior continued, and it, you know, made headlines around New York. And then a couple of nights later, she apparently, the New York Post reported that she went to Yankee Stadium and was hanging out in the clubhouse and pawing at herself and drinking from a bottle of whiskey, and that she had actually been banned from the new Yankee Stadium by the owners of the Yankees. Actually, Jerry Seinfeld was on the Mets telecast last night, and he, funnily enough, said, you know, we all love Lady Gaga, because last night was the Mets decided to respond to her finger waving with actually a foam finger that they distributed to fans. And they called it, it was a promotion for the player David Wright. And they said, extend the right finger. And it was, you know, raising the index finger instead of the middle one.
Nancy Barra, do you worry about these messages, about this behavior? I know you're a mother of four children, ages 13 to 19. I mean, is this acceptable today, sort of anything goes mentality?
I think there was this kind of behavior before Lady Gaga. There will be this kind of behavior after Lady Gaga. And this kind of stuff, the kinds of things she does are available to lots of people. This is, let me be very clear, not to say that I personally find it gripping and wonderful. I don't. But I think the kids are exposed to lots and lots of things like this today. What I find interesting, though, is just going to make this point again, that I still think that what's interesting about her is her populism, the way that she makes people think that she's just like anyone. Let me compare her behavior at Shea Stadium and Citi Field and Yankee Stadium with something that had to do with Madonna and the Yankees a few years ago, which was when Madonna was seen sitting with Alex Rodriguez at a baseball game. And this was all about, you know, is she leaving Guy Ritchie? It was all sort of normal celebrity talk. And she felt kind of out of reach. This is somebody who knew A-Rod and could sit there, whereas Lady Gaga behaves like somebody that we, you know, she exposes herself in a way, or she behaves in a kind of she's not sitting there being a celebrity. She's putting herself in everyone's face, and I think that's a really good way of saying why she's different from someone like Madonna and why I think she appeals to people today.
To Harrisonburg, Virginia, Sarah is on the line. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
Hi.
You had said earlier that perhaps her target audience wasn't for over 30, and I'm 29, so I fall right under that. But even still, I feel like I'm more of like the Madonna generation, and I just don't think she's a popular influence for the target audience that she's going for, which is like really young girls usually. And I just feel like her clothing and her lyrics are just purely pornographic sometimes, in the way that she just flat out says everything and doesn't veil it in any way. Even Madonna never had such filthy lyrics as this. And I think it's really irresponsible for parents nowadays to be letting their kids listen to that type of stuff, because, I mean, my parents let us listen to a lot of music, but they wouldn't have let us listen to that. And as far as her persona of trying to be like Susie Every Girl or whatever and saying anybody can do this, she didn't grow up in a situation where she was just anybody. She grew up fairly wealthy, and you know, she went to high school with Paris Hilton, and she's not just anybody.
Sarah, thank you very much. Maura Johnston, your response?
Well, you know, it's funny because I was actually, as a kid, I was actually not allowed to buy Madonna records. My mother thought that the use of Madonna's name was just the tip of the iceberg as far as blasphemy went. And I actually was, they were banned from my home. But, you know, I think, I guess it's a measure of degrees. If you look at, you know, say the Justify My Love video or the Erotica video, I mean, those are two videos from Madonna's catalog that, you know, were pretty much relegated to very late night MTV because of their content. And I guess, you know, it's weird to sort of compare the sort of morals of the 1990 and that era to now, because I think you also are just operating in two totally different times.
How quickly things have changed. I think that was the point of the caller. Let me get another caller in here. Luke is on the line from Provincetown, Massachusetts. Hi, Luke. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Fine. Go ahead.
I love her. I wish she was around when I was of a certain age. All I had was, maybe Rocky Horror Picture Show, which I think, she encapsulates, the don't dream it, be it. I just love the fact that she's out there saying, do whatever you want, be whoever you want, love whoever you want. I wish I had that sort of influence when I was back in the day.
Luke, thank you. Thank you very much. Here's Barbara in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Barbara. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. I was going to speak to the fact that you've got a philosophy professor on there. I was actually a philosophy major when I first started school, left to learn and teach and dance professionally ballroom dancing. So kind of going between both worlds, loving the intellectual life and also the theatricality of one's sexuality. Actually left that ballroom dancing world because of the hypersexualized aspect. And I think one of the reasons I appreciate Lady Gaga is the sexualities that she presents in males and females is more fluid. There's more androgyny. Definitely in future would like to see her exploring a little bit more of that, both sides. I definitely see it in her background dancers. The males don't necessarily seem straight up heterosexual, and I think that that's good. I think another really strong difference between her and, say, Madonna, she seems to have sort of a sense of humor about what she's doing, too. Very much that she knows that she's performing all of the time, to where somebody like Madonna, it seems more kind of just like, this is who I am.
Always on stage. Yeah, she talks about that. Barbara, thank you very much. We have a lot of comments from our website, onpointradio.org. Here's one from Callie. She says, yawn. She's a flavor of the day, Lady Gaga. Good at marketing. Lucky to live in the area of media, in the era of media saturation and personal foibles and desperate attempts at drawing attention to oneself. It's only about empowering herself, not anybody else. Here's Callie, who says, when people react so strongly to her, I feel like they are missing the point. In my view, she is making a parody of pop culture and representing it to us in all of its ridiculousness. And here's another call from Michael in Bedford, Massachusetts. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. You've had all these dreary oldsters on. Now, I have a 10-year-old son. Actually, he just turned 11. And in the back seat of my car, I hear he and his soccer team. Now, these are 10-year-old kids in the most part. They can sing every one of Lady Gaga's songs. They are not interested at all in girls yet, at all. They have some good girl pals, but that's just what they are. They play soccer with them. But these kids, and this is from Wayland, Massachusetts, which your listeners may not know, is a very affluent, semi-rural town in the western burbs. And these kids are really turned on to her, oh, and Kesha.
Is it because of the thumping beat? Is it the good music, do you think, Michael, that gets them?
It's just fun with a beat. I mean, all this analysis. I'm sure that woman didn't. I'm surprised she didn't submit her article to the New York Review of Books.
Michael, thank you. Thank you very much. Nancy Bear, I'll give you a chance to respond.
Well, it's interesting. Michael's comment is typical of a lot of the comments that I got on the blog entry that I did. And I'm not particularly interested in analyzing Lady Gaga, despite the fact of being a guest on this show. What I'm interested in is the extent to which I think she is epitomizing something that's already there in the culture, which is philosophically interesting. Can I take 2 seconds to say what that is?
Okay, go ahead.
Very, very briefly, it seems to me that It's part of what it is to be a person. I'm going to have to give you the cartoon version, but it's part of what it is to be a person to feel oneself split in various ways. You're an actor in the world. You do things. You're conducting your life. And on the other hand, you're creaturely. You are the object of other people's judgments. Things happen to you. And the particular form that this is taking, I think, for a lot of young women in our culture now, and I've been writing about this for many years when Lady Gaga was still a little girl, is that on the one hand, they're feeling very much like subjects more than ever and feeling very empowered. Again, women of a certain class and women of certain means, women in Wayland, let's say, maybe, or young women in Wayland. And on the other hand, they are feeling more and more like they have to make themselves into sexual objects. And Lady Gaga has the genius somehow of being able to combine those two things and make them look consistent with one another.
Mara Johnston, does it even matter what kind of reviews her albums and performances get from critics? Or it should be beyond scrutiny and deconstruction at this point?
Well, I think the Agency of Music Critics is probably a topic for another time. But, you know, I think that it's funny because actually critics really do like her a lot. They appreciate the fact that she's bringing this grandiosity back to pop that was sort of missing. And I think really the ultimate test is, you know, whether people can sing along with it. I mean, I was reminded when the caller was telling his story of the recent episode of South Park where Cartman was doing Poker Face. And, you know, that I think is a sign that if it's filtering down to the sort of mythical 9-year-olds of South Park, then, you know, there's definitely an imprint that's being made.
Here's Lisa in Venice, Florida. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say, and I think your guest already went over this, and it's already been spoken to by a couple of other callers, but from what I see, Lady Gaga's purpose was to capitalize on the humor in the society that we are already living in. This extreme fashion, extreme sexuality, extreme everything. And it just happened to be a formula that was very successful for her. And I think that's why she seems like she's having so much fun with it. But I think we need to also take her music in the context of it really is adult music, and it's up to us as parents what we allow kids to listen to or see. I might let my daughter listen to some of the songs, but I wouldn't let her watch the videos. That's adult entertainment, just like, you know, any show that has curse words or anything like that. And I think it's up to the parents to determine whether or not it's going to be appropriate for their child. But that's what I think she did. I think she just got I personally think she got lucky poking fun at everything that we're already, big as life about here,
Lisa,
in this country.
Lisa, thank you very much. Here's one more call from Kendra in Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Kendra. Welcome
Hi.
To On Point. Hi.
Hi. I'm exactly Lady Gaga's age. I'm 24 years old, and I am not a pop listener. I'm a professional modern dancer, and I think that Lady Gaga is a very successful pop star, and that she is exactly that. She's a pop star. She'll go out, and that she's a great example of how money and marketing work flawlessly together. And I think that she's gotten to where she has because of her wow factor, which is something that she shares with Michael Jackson, Madonna, you know, all the examples that were previously on the show. And I think that this kind of clear and real person that comes through on her Twitter and other accounts is maybe who she really is, but it's very hard to tell. I think that if she were actually this crazy person she puts out on stage, that she would be more like maybe the British pop singer Amy Winehouse, who does have some serious issues. Because if anyone were to see her in performance or on the street or this kind of, you know, face that she puts on, it's very fake, and I just don't buy it. And I think her real self is maybe this original person that started as more of a Nora Jones, Fiona Apple type, and I'm not sure that I buy her act.
Kendra, thank you very much. Mara Johnston, final note here, final word. Staying power for Lady Gaga? Is she the pop sensation of the moment, or is she a la Madonna, Michael Jackson, going to last?
Well, you know, it's always interesting to see what pop stars last. I mean, 20 years ago, you could have thought that, you know, any number of pop stars would have had staying power. But I mean, I think the fact that she's had as long of a run with singles as she has in this very distracted culture is a sign that she's clearly delivering something to people that, you know, they want. And so it'll be interesting to see how her career progresses over the next couple of years when she sort of takes a break, because she's been on tour now for the past 3 years. So when she regroups and comes back and sort of responds to the, you know, the changes in the culture that she's helped sort of push along, that'll, I think, be the real test.
And Nancy Bauer, your final thoughts.
I guess to me,
if she's pushing, she's expressing something, I think, that was already in the culture, and she's doing it in a way that is very eye-popping. She has the wow factor that Kendra was mentioning. But I also think that if she – I'm not sure she's ahead of the pack. And as the culture evolves, it's not clear to me how she'll evolve with it. But I do think that right now she really does epitomize something.
Nancy Bauer is Associate Professor of Philosophy at Tufts University. Her article on Lady Gaga, Lady Power, appeared in Sunday's New York Times. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Nancy, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jane.
And Maura Johnston, joining us from New York City. She's a writer and music critic for The Daily Beast, Village Voice, Vanity Fair, The Owl, and Gawker. Thank you, Maura. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thanks.
You can continue the conversation, listeners, and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.